Welcome to the CBWC Theology for the Ordinary podcast. I'm Cindy Emmons, and I'm here with Mark Dirksen and Ed Neufeld. Ed will lead us as we attempt to gain a deeper understanding of the mission of the church in the Gospels and Acts. You're listening to episode 14, The Good Samaritan Loved His Enemy.
Let's talk about where we have gone and where we are going. We have covered Matthew and John, and now we're beginning Luke and Acts. So let's review what we're doing. Our basic title is Not Improving on Our Instructions. We're trying to lay out what Jesus told us to do. Jesus himself did things he never asked us to do. If we did what he said we should do, how would that look? And within his instructions, we're only trying to discover the center, not list everything. Is there one main thing that he calls us to do? And yes, there is. It's our life with one another. So the full title here is Not Improving on Our Instructions. The mission of the church in the Gospels and Acts is to love one another. We're going through the Gospels and Acts because those who doubt this one another mission usually appeal to something in the Gospels or an Act. I covered John before Luke and Acts because I wanted to do Luke and Acts together, and Acts takes us to the early church, so it seemed best to complete the life of Christ first. In the Luke and Acts sessions we're starting now, we'll spend most of our time in Acts. We want to know what God wants churches to do, and we will find Luke's teaching on that most clearly in how he tells the story of the first church. But we'll cover a couple of sections of Luke. Today, the Good Samaritan. When people challenge our one another emphasis from the Gospels, in my experience, they most often do so from Matthew's so-called Great Commission or from Luke's Good Samaritan parable, which we'll take up today. So this is one of the scriptures that we'll look at in part because of what it does not say. It does not call us to take care of the world's needy people, just as that line stands. So let's turn to Luke 10. You have heard much about how we treat one another, so it's time we took hold of the bigger picture. Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan to a man that needed to hear about loving his enemies. So I'm going to read Luke 10, verses 25 to 29. And then verse 36 at the end. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" And then Jesus told him a parable, and at the end, Jesus asked, "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" Which question does Jesus answer? We're going to begin with the question Jesus asked at the end. Which of these was a neighbor? Jesus told the parable of the Good Samaritan so the law teacher could ask that question and so that we could answer that question. At the beginning of the parable, the law teacher asked, "Who is my neighbor?" At the end, Jesus asked, "Who was a neighbor?" People, these are not the same question. Let's not ignore the question at the end. Let's not assume that Jesus told the parable to answer the law teacher's question. When the law teacher says, "Who is my neighbor?" he wants Jesus to look at all the people out there in the world and to tell him who "love your neighbor" is talking about. Jesus knows the answer, but he does not like the question. Jesus asks him, "Who was a neighbor?" Jesus' question has nothing to do with all the people out there. Jesus asks what kind of person the law teacher is. Can you feel the difference between those two? The law teacher wants to know about the people out there in the world. And Jesus wants to know what kind of person the law teacher is. We have to feel the difference there. I'm making this point because good commentaries have always said that the question at the end is the important one. But in my circles, the first question is the only one we read. That way, the parable teaches us who our neighbor is, which makes our neighbor everyone. But that is not the question that Jesus asked, and that is not what Jesus said about neighbors. So we're going to go into two detours. We're going to take two detours here to explain a little more what's going on. Detour one, love your neighbor means love one another. And I'm looking at Leviticus 19, verse 16. We covered this earlier in the Matthew 22 sermon on the two great commands, but it needs repeating. Moses gave the second great command, love your neighbor as yourself, in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. I'm going to read that verse as well as the two before it. I will read what leads up to that command to show who neighbor is, who Moses means by neighbor. Okay, this is Leviticus 19, 16. Do not spread slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor. Do not hate a fellow Israelite. Rebuke your neighbor frankly. Do not seek revenge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. So for Moses, your neighbor is a fellow Israelite, a child of God just like you. In the New Testament letters, Paul quotes, love your neighbor twice, and James once, and your neighbor is always a fellow believer. Romans 13, Galatians 5, James 2. There's no difference between love your neighbor and love one another. Moses and Paul and James agree on this, which means Jesus does too. God's people loving each other has never been exclusive. Also in Leviticus 19, Moses says, love foreigners as you love yourselves. The foreigners living among them were not their neighbors. Did you get that? The foreigners living among them were not their neighbors. But love your neighbor, i.e. love one another, is not exclusive. It flows over to everyone we meet. In Matthew 5, Jesus said, you have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Now, Moses never said, hate your enemy. But Jesus knew that some Jews in his day did say that. The law teacher was perhaps one of those people. One of those people who believed, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. So Jesus went on to say, but I tell you, love your enemies. So Jesus was clear. Your neighbor and your enemy are not the same people. The enemy beside you is not your neighbor. They're your enemies. Jesus did not say, but I tell you, everyone is your neighbor. Jesus did not tell the story of the Good Samaritan to change the law teacher's definition of a neighbor. Jesus told the story to change how the law teacher treated his enemies. Our story is in Luke 10. Near the end of Luke 9, Jesus and the disciples went to a Samaritan village, but the Samaritans would have nothing to do with them. James and John offered to call down God's fire on that Samaritan village. Jesus rebuked them, and he led them to another village. The disciples also were ready to love their neighbor and hate their enemy. And Jesus probably tells this parable about a good Samaritan as much for the 12 as for the law teacher. Earlier in Luke 6, Jesus said, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. Jesus told the parable to turn the law teacher toward his enemies and turn the disciples toward their enemies and us toward our enemies. Love your neighbor means love one another. The detour is over, but we're going to take another detour. The detour two, sometimes Jesus changed the question. Sometimes Jesus answered questions in a straightforward way, but not always, and I'm going to give you some examples. In Luke 13, a man asked Jesus, Lord, will only a few be saved? Listen to Jesus' answer. Make every effort to enter through the narrow door, because many will try and won't be able. Jesus did not think, will only a few be saved, was the important question. Jesus answered a more important question, something like, is it hard to be saved? In Luke 21, Jesus told the disciples that the Jerusalem temple will be completely destroyed. And they asked, when will this happen? And what will the sign be? All the prophecy conferences are still trying to sort that out. But listen to how Jesus answered. Watch out that you're not deceived. And he ends his answer, be always on the watch and pray. The disciples wanted to know time and the sign. What they should have asked was, how will we survive those difficult times? Because that's the question Jesus answered. He changed the question. In Matthew 19, the Pharisees asked if it was lawful to divorce their wives for any reason. What Jesus gave them was a lesson from Genesis 1 and 2 on God's plan for marriage. We saw in Matthew 22 that when someone asked Jesus about the one great command, he gave two great commands, not one. So, Jesus regularly did not answer what people asked him. He answered a more important question. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus makes it easy. He asks the better question at the end, so we don't have to guess about the right question. The question is not, who is my neighbor? The question is, will I act like a neighbor to someone who's not my neighbor? That's the question. Will I act like a neighbor to someone who's not my neighbor? Let's read the parable. So I'm going to read the story, Luke 10, starting at verse 30. Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he put the man on his own donkey. He brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. The point here is that the Samaritan loves his enemy. Samaritans and Jews were enemies who despised each other. The Luke 9 story of the hostile Samaritan village and the hostile sons of Zebedee makes that clear. Jesus could tell that this man was one of the Jews who would love neighbors and hate enemies, so he told a story about a man who loved his enemy. Jesus was not changing the two great commands, nor was he changing the biblical definition of neighbor. He was talking to people who knew all this and assumed permission to ignore their enemy who was hungry or thirsty. True children of God respond with active compassion when a needy enemy is in front of him. They will act like neighbors to those who are not their neighbors. But there's something else going on here. Jesus makes our enemy the godly model. We could take this parable as if Jesus described a godly Jew stopping to take care of the evil Samaritan who lay half dead on the side of the road. Other Jewish teachers told stories like that. And if we believers stop to take care of our evil enemy lying half dead on the side of the road, that would be a good thing. And we often take this story as if that is what Jesus said. But that is not the story that Jesus told. Who makes your blood boil? Who makes you angry just thinking about it? Who opposes everything that's right? Who makes you fume? Perhaps you have a personal enemy, someone who repeatedly goes after you and has done you harm. I've got people like that too, make no mistake, people whose attitudes and actions have hurt me and infuriate me. Perhaps governments or authorities make your blood boil. Who's your enemy? In the story Jesus told, you are the half-dead person on the side of the road, and your godly leaders won't help you, but the enemy you despise sees you and knows you are the enemy. The Samaritan knows the half-dead person is a Jew. Your despised enemy sees you and feels sorry for you and takes excellent care of you at some cost to themselves. And then Jesus says to you, go be like that person. Why does Jesus do that? Why does Jesus make my enemy the hero of a godly compassion story and then tell me to be like that person? I don't like the story that way. The story of me being good to my enemy is hard enough. But this story goes after something else. Why did Jesus tell it that way? Jesus wants us to see that our enemy has more of what God prizes than we think. Jesus does not like how quickly God's people divide others into good and bad. We need more humility when we think about the people that make us angry. We're not as good as we think we are, and they're not as bad as we think they are. Some things they do might be very bad, but there's more to them than that. There are things in our enemies that God likes to see. And God does not want us to dismiss these people so quickly. There are things in us he doesn't like either. When you come across your enemy lying half dead on the side of the road, don't feel too superior. What should we do with this? What should we do? I have five applications. One, think more kindly about your enemies. The law teacher did not like this story. It would have been bad enough if Jesus had told the law teacher to care for a Samaritan, but Jesus went farther and told him about a Samaritan that took care of him. Let's guard what comes out of our mouths about the people we don't like. We speak as if we have God's license to condemn them. We don't. Jesus calls us to bless them and pray for them. That's what should come out of our mouths. Our Father in heaven is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Jesus said we should imitate our Father. Listen, I need this as much as anyone, folks. If I feel I'm in safe company, then I rant. It's not good. Let's speak kindly about our enemies. Think more kindly about your enemies. That's number one. Number two, when you see your enemy in need in front of you, help them. This I think we already do. If we saw our enemy in need there on the side of the road, we would stop and do what we could. Let's keep doing that. It's important to God that we are that kind of people. That's what this story is about. Three, this story is not meant to be a burden. There are a few things this story does not mean. It is not intended to load us up. People can take this story to mean that God calls us to rescue every needy person we know about. That's not why Jesus told this story. The Samaritan found himself alone on the road with one needy person. Jesus did not tell the story so the law teacher would now help every needy person he met. Jesus told the story so the law teacher would not refuse help to his enemy. In a crisis situation, would I refuse help to my enemy? That's what Jesus asks us. The story is not meant to be a burden, and four, this story is not a call to mission. Some believers devote themselves to street mission and helping the homeless on the basis of this story, and in the process, they have little connection to any church. They say they live by the parable of the Good Samaritan, but the Samaritan in this parable did not devote himself to helping wounded travelers, and Jesus was not calling the law teacher to devote himself to helping wounded travelers. Street missions are good, and they are from God. This story is not a call to that. The Samaritan was going about his own business, and he came upon his enemy who was in distress and needed help. What this parable teaches is difficult enough. Let's not make it say more than it says. It's not a call to mission. It's a call about our enemies. If your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink. That's in Proverbs 25, and Paul quotes that at the end of Romans 12. That is what the Good Samaritan did. It's a call to that. Number five, and last, this parable does not change the definition of neighbor or change the mission of the church. Our central mission is still to love one another. Loving one another is the single most important thing, but it's not everything, and it's not the only thing. The two great commands still stand as the two great commands. Love God, love one another. That's the main thing. Jesus, at the end, did not ask the law teacher, "So who do you think is your neighbor?" If Jesus had asked that, every needy person would be our neighbor. Jesus did not ask, "Who do you think is your neighbor?" Jesus asked, "Who do you think acted like a neighbor?" Jesus taught us to love our neighbors and also to love our enemies. Our enemies are not our neighbors. Jesus was not trying to change how Moses understood neighbor. Love one another equals love your neighbor as yourself. That's how Paul and James understood it too. But love for one another always spills over. Loving our neighbor always overflows. It's never is exclusive. God is good to all people, good and bad. So we, his children, do the same. We must begin with the question Jesus asked at the end. The law teacher asked about the rest of the world. He wanted Jesus to divide the world into those he should care for and those he could ignore. Jesus asked a different question aimed at the law teacher himself. Are you a caring person, even with your enemies? That's the question. Jesus asked, who acted like a neighbor? A true neighbor is one whose first love is for fellow believers, but whose neighborly love also spills over to non-neighbors, to foreigners, and to enemies. Amen.
Thank you, Ed. It seems as though the Jews and the Samaritans were at odds because the Samaritans were seen as unfaithful to the nation of Israel, right? They intermarried with pagans and religions differed, even though they were related blood-wise. I wonder if our enemies are actually closer to us than we realize, rather than some group of people that are way out there somewhere. And so I'm thinking of, you know, family breakdowns and estranged family members, those sorts of things. I wonder if you'd have a comment on that.
Yes. This certainly applies in those situations. Eugene Peterson has a little book called The Wisdom of Each Other. And now I'm taking this in a different direction. I'm answering your question about family breakdown and so on, which is a little bit different. Although in broad strokes, it's the same thing, being good to your enemies. He talks about courtesy. He said, courtesy is not a lesser form of love. When there are tensions in families and in relationships, courtesy is often the only thing that's available to you. And it is always available to you. And so I want to bring courtesy into love your enemy when the enemy is someone in your own household or someone in your own church. It's an important starting point. Peterson makes it. He emphasizes that. The story certainly applies to people who are family or in our church who, in one way or another, have also become enemies. Fair enough. And it rules out just separating from them. Does not really leave room for that. Good.
Related, I think that Jesus shows love for others by challenging their views. But I find this very difficult to do. You know, let's say you're in some coffee shop or some social setting and somebody says something that is actually inappropriate or offensive. My main response is just to go silent, into radio silence, and not say a thing about it. And instead just fume about it, you know, as I drive home, right? So I'm wondering if there's a way for us to get, you know, courtesy in mind, certainly, but is there a way to just gently say that, you know, I disagree with what you're saying, or is that even helpful? I don't know.
Well, that's the right question, and I am no better at that than you are. Jesus did it indirectly. See, he told a story. Even when he really didn't like what people were saying, he would respond, but he went after them indirectly and kindly. And, you know, these people are criticizing him for healing a woman on the Sabbath. And he tells a story about pulling your donkey out of a pit on the Sabbath, something like that, or loosing them so that they can drink water. He asks questions. My wife of Marilyn is very good at this. I'm not. If I'm going to say it all, I'm going to be quiet and not say anything. Or if I'm going to say it, it's going to come out belligerently. Just because, not because I'm necessarily angry, but I'm fighting against my own reserve. And the only way I can get through my own boundaries is to blast through. And it does not sound good to the other person. And I don't blame them. They think, what just happened here? So it makes a fight. Marilyn, on the other hand, is a much softer way, and she'll start asking questions. And if you're thinking at all, you've certainly been put in your place. But you can't really, there's no traction there to get angry at her. So I'm not good at that. Jesus was very good at that. Although, in fact, they also got angry at him. So wisdom in the moment. The only answer I have found to that is, if this is a repeated event, I can figure out a way to say this. I think about it when I'm not there. And if it comes up repeatedly, I can figure out an answer when I'm not there. And then I use that if the Lord gives a chance. But it's a problem.
I'll start my parables with a guy named Ed. How's that?
Sure.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, we seem to have an example again about what to do with the people right in front of you, you know, as we've talked about before. So it's not about far-reaching sort of implications, but actually starting right in front of you. I think I have that right.
Yes, absolutely. That's the story. When Jesus wanted to redirect, he made it face to face. There are just two people on that road. There are others that come and gone, but when the Samaritan comes on the scene, at any given point, there's just two people on that little spot, the priest and then the Levite and then the Samaritan. So that's the real question. And what's the dynamic going on there? He said that the Samaritan had compassion on him. Now, quite possibly, the priest also felt sorry for that guy, but he didn't do anything. And the Levite, I mean, it's just a story, but it is likely that there's some real sympathy for the person that's half dead. But Jesus doesn't call that compassion because you feel that. That's nothing. The Samaritan had compassion because he stopped and did something. That's called having compassion. The law teacher at the end said, I suppose the one who had mercy on him. So we're talking about that. So that compassion and mercy, there's only actions or it doesn't exist. So that has to be somebody in front of you. The feeling sorry for something out there is sort of immaterial here.
Yeah. I'm encouraged by how far removed this is from the story of Lamech in Genesis 4, right? Where, you know, my enemies, I've done this, you know, they did this to me, but I've compounded what I've done to them and then make a song about it, right? I think that, celebrate it, right? And I think that this is just so far removed and so, but also, really difficult in a different way.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is. On the other hand, at least in my circles, I think that if someone they really didn't like, they met on the road, their car stuck in the ditch in the winter, for example, they would help. I think they would help. And I think that even if they knew who it was, I think that basic compassion would guide their actions more than the things that irritate them. I don't know that, but I think that quite a few in my circles would do that. I don't think that's uncommon. And I think that's the kind of thing this parable is really encouraging.
I was at our assembly meetings in High River a few years ago, and I was up early, so I went to McDonald's. There was an old fellow there, and we started talking, and for whatever reason, he had it in him to tell this story about when he was a kid. He remembers that his dad and another person from the church ended up having a falling out, and it was a pretty serious one. And so this guy was recalling that they lived on a farm with a very long driveway. that actually had come to the point where his dad and the family no longer went to church. So one Sunday morning, this fellow that his dad had grievances against came by the farm on his bike and came onto the yard, and the boy was playing, and he asked, "Hey, is your dad at home?" So the boy went to get the dad, and he has recollections of those two men walking back down the driveway, one pushing his bike, but trying to come to terms with how they had treated each other. And he said, the next Sunday, we were back in church. And so that, I don't know what in the world led him to tell me that story, but I'm thinking, you know, this is obviously something that's really important in terms of what has been modeled for him, right? Mm-hmm. And how important these sorts of conversations about, I don't know, loving each other, loving our supposed enemies, right?
I really like that, and that this man has this lingering picture of those two men on the driveway.
Yeah.
Something good happened. Well, bless the guy who came on the bike.
Yep.
Made the first move. Boy, that's the, but the other person received him, and that's not to be assumed either. That's all. I really like the story. And whatever moved him, good. You need, Mark, you need to hear stories like that.
Yeah.
You deal with enough stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
I find that the more I listen to people and hear their stories, the less enemy-like people seem to me. Like, I've had some miserable things. And having gone through those and worked through those things, I recognize that stuff in other people. And some of the stuff that comes out of people is just they've been hurt before, or they have chronic illness or whatever, right? It's it's really hard to be a kind person all the time when you feel sick all the time. And it's really hard to be kind all the time when you've been hurt really badly. And so, I mean, the world is just full of hurt and pain, and and we don't help anything when we judge people for it, or when we bite back at them because of something that they said. And so I can see why this is so important to Jesus, because a kind word to somebody in a situation like that is much more important.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this story is not asking for anything heroic. Okay. It's just aiming us in a direction. Don't go down that path. Aim yourself in this path. It's just really simple about your enemies. Don't nurture what you have against them. Find kinder ways to process this. It's just a really simple direction of how to handle this that he's giving us. And that's the real teeth of this. But of course, remembering that the story is, Jesus told a story where my enemy comes to me and takes care of me. So anyway, but it's just it's a really simple direction. It's good. So, and you are right. Because it's a big problem in the world, I'll tell you.
Well, it's also a big problem in the church, too. Like, I have found that Christians are can be just as much my enemy as somebody outside. And in certain circumstances, I found people outside the church to be kinder when I'm struggling. So I don't think that it's just a enemy outside the church. It's everywhere.
No. In Exodus, this is sort of parallel to the great command, second great command, love your neighbor as yourself. In Exodus 19 or so, somewhere in there, 21, Moses talks about if you meet the one who hates you, or if you meet your enemy or your one who hates you, and you will be good to them. And there he's talking about fellow Israelites. There's an Israelite who hates you. If you find his donkey on the road, you take it back to him. Don't take it yourself, and don't just let it wander. You take it back. If you see him on the road, a man, and he needs help, you help him on the road. You do that with your enemy and the one who hates you. So, and that's all within the people of God. These people all are actually legitimately also their neighbors in the sense that they are fellow Israelites. So it certainly applies in those situations. Someone was awful to me, and I was enraged. And then I thought, why should their evil make a sinner out of me? That's not right. But it was making a sinner out of me. And I thought, that's not right. I didn't do anything wrong. They did this to me. And now look what's doing to me. And now I'm becoming like that. So I begged God for help, and he was good to me. That's a scary thought, but that's what happens.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. Our next episode will be called The Second Lost Son.